Be a lot of fun cheering this afternoon with the Super Bowl and all, but it's great to come together on a Sunday morning and cheer God. Say, God, man, you're good in our lives. This is really good. I'm looking forward to watching the Super Bowl too. And I think it was San Fran that you meant that you were talking about. As you're cheering for San Francisco. Oh, okay. I was trying to follow that. So sorry. Boy, hopefully I won't even try to do any jokes up here today, given my state of mind. You know, that's a great thing. It's fun that's happening there. I had a fun experience yesterday. You'll notice I'm wearing a wristband this morning that says, Go Canada, Go. It's got our red on it. And there's a much more Canadian thing happening down at UBC right now with a tennis tournament, the Davis Cup. And much less watched, much less hype. But I had a fun day yesterday. I went to a class at Regent College yesterday morning. It's actually a class on how to speak better. I figured, you know, I should get better at what I do up here. And so I went there yesterday morning, and John Stackhouse was speaking, and it was actually the end of a break, and I was sitting in the back, and there was another church planner sitting next to me, and we ended up in conversation. We were still finishing up our conversation, but I just heard he was starting to talk, and he was talking about Davis Cup and tickets, and I just instinctively put my hand like this. He goes, oh, I'll give the tickets to you. I was going, what? So I got these tickets to watch the doubles game yesterday afternoon. It was just fun to cheer for Canada and just... we didn't quite pull it off, but we pushed it right to the limit against Spain, who are like, they won like 3 out of the last 5 years in Davis Cup, so we're way underdogs, and it was just huge. There's a potential of us beating them out this afternoon. Anyhow, fun stuff to cheer for teams and ultimately to cheer God on. And this morning we want to talk about having the strength to move forward. This has been a series where we've kind of faced the reality that life doesn't always go, our team doesn't always win, our relationships don't always work out, life doesn't go always as expected, the health diagnosis doesn't go it isn't always in our favor. And certainly it wasn't for Naomi and for Ruth. And in this book of Ruth, to review the story a little bit, we've been talking about the last few weeks, Naomi faces famine, moves to Moab, has her sons, two sons, marry two Moabite women, foreigners. They end up passing away, her sons do. Her husband passes away. And they come back 10 years later, and they have known hardship and pain. And now, we've been talking about that, and as we moved last week, we found that Ruth went out and started to glean in the fields, which was a provision. It's almost like going out and picking up pop bottles or something that's been thrown out, the leftover grain in the field. And finds out that there's a gentleman named Boaz who's not just willing to allow people to pick up grain after the harvesters, but actually puts more out there for her. And she comes back with great news to Naomi, and that's where we ended last week, saying, look at this. Look at this haul that I got today. This is, actually, they figure out it was like 15 days of wages of the amount of grain that's usually given to a worker. And so we pick up the story there in Ruth chapter 3. About Ruth now heading down and Naomi giving her a plan after finding out that the season is ending, the grain harvesting season is ending, and we're going to read that, chapter 3. It says, one day Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women. Tonight he will be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do. Interesting. Like, this is intriguing. I mean, we're going to try and unpack this a little bit because we understand we're a few thousand years removed from this kind of context and what it's about. And here's what Ruth says. I will do everything you say. So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. And after Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. And around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. I'm your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. The Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now, don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers, there's another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well, let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning. So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until the morning, but she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize each other. For Boaz had said, "No one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor." Then Boaz said to her, "Bring your cloak and spread it out." He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to the town. When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "What happened, my daughter?" Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her, and she added, "He gave me these 6 scoops of barley and said, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said to her, "Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today." So we have in this story, a profound change of fortune, something that is definitely moving forward. I mentioned last week that we had kind of gotten stuck in chapter one, the difficulty, the pain, and the strength needed for those kind of tough times. Today I want to talk about that strength that we find from God to help us move forward. And I think there's a bunch of things here in this story that show us what it means to, in the midst of the challenges that we face, and we might have a backdrop of a lot of difficulty, a lot of tragedy. You might be going through a season of life like that right now. Regardless of where you are, life is always full of a mixture of joys and sorrows. How is it that we can find strength to move forward? And maybe you've had an opportunity to observe somebody near you or with you or somebody of faith that you go, what is it that helps you to move forward? What is it that helps you? And today, I think there's some significant things as we move into communion later on this morning that we can say, you know, this is where strength is found. This is where we find the strength to move forward in the midst of difficult circumstances. Well, the first one that I want to talk about today is what is really drawn from chapter 2. And it's chapter 2, verse 20. It's a kind of the backdrop of what we know about God. That in the midst of things, there is a God who is still good. And last week we looked at that story, and in the message it says, oh, when Naomi comes back and she finds out that Ruth has got all this grain, she stops, she goes, oh, God hasn't walked out on us yet. That's what the message says. He's still good here in the good times and the bad times. And in this translation here in verse 20, it says, may the Lord bless him. This is about Boaz, who's like a God figure in this story too. He is showing his kindness to us as well as to your dead husband. That man is one of our closest relatives, one of our family redeemers. What we find here in this verse really is Naomi turning the corner and seeing really that in the middle of her difficulty, there is still a God who's at work, who's doing something good in their lives. Now, even though Ruth had come home with a pretty big haul of grain, considering that she's out there in the equivalent of kind of collecting pop bottles, he sees that and she's able to say, oh, something good is happening in our lives, even in the midst of this. And I think that's incredibly significant for us and whatever challenges we might face in life is to take and to see something good that God's doing and hang on to that. Is there something that you see that God's putting out there and saying, you know, even in the midst of all of this, here's what I want you to focus on. Here's something good. It might be the kindness of somebody, as Naomi was able to see, that God's good, that he's working out his goodness even through that. Now, there's something very significant to where our focus goes. We can continue to always just see, oh, but there's this. You know, and Naomi and Ruth could have gone, oh, but there's still this. We still have, oh, look at all we've lost. We've lost our husbands. We've lost our status in the community. And knowing the context of that time, they were still destitute, really. But instead of focusing on that and only that, they were able to see that here's something good. Here's something good that I can grab onto. Kevin had mentioned a few weeks ago a book that has been that really unpackages this story amazingly. It's written by a woman named Carolyn Custis James. And she writes this book. She calls it The Gospel of Ruth. because quite appropriately, she sees the good news about Jesus. Gospel means good news, played out in the story of Ruth. And she actually compares Ruth to the person of Job, that in the midst of difficulty, they were able to move through, not knowing the end of the story, and stay true to God and see God do an amazing thing at the end. Well, the amazing thing is, as she was writing this book a few years ago, so she's writing this book, she's talking about belief in God's goodness. And she's writing the chapter on that. And while she's actually writing the chapter, she gets a phone call from her mother-in-law. And in that phone call, she could hear the panic in her mother-in-law's voice. And what her mother-in-law explained to her was that her brother-in-law, which would be her mother-in-law's son, her husband's brother, who is a very experienced mountain climber and might climb many mountains, was hiking Mount Hood near Portland and was towards the peak of Mount Hood when a storm moved in and circumstances went really badly. And he had phoned from a snow cave up there on the mountain. Two of his buddies, also experienced guys, had gone out to get help. But unexpected blizzards had moved in, and there was a rescue mission going on to try and find them. So, and all that moment, as she's writing about God's goodness, this is the news that comes to her. Well, she of course lets her husband know. He flies up from Florida to be there at the base camp. And it was covered by all sorts of networks. And in fact, just a few months ago, I turned on the TV and there was a documentary about this whole rescue operation. Well, the weather didn't clear up, and the blizzards got worse. And as the days progressed, it moved from a rescue operation to just a reconnaissance, just trying to find the bodies. And sure enough, all three men froze on the mountain. You can imagine the difficulty of writing about the goodness of God in the middle of that. But it was interesting what she said, that even for her and her husband, and as they've been working through this, and obviously for the widow and the children of her brother-in-law, she unpackages how they could still see that God is at work, and there still is a mystery, and why didn't God just stop the blizzards from moving in? He could have intervened. All these questions, unanswered questions. But an ability to see that even in the midst of this, there's a goodness of God. And interestingly enough, she writes the story as small as it seems and as insignificant in the midst of this big thing. Her husband is there, and he's doing an interview with CNN, and the interviewers are there, and he's out in the freezing cold. And a reporter could see that his hands were frozen. He had just come up from Florida, so he was completely unprepared for this, and offered him his gloves. And her husband took the gloves and used them, and at the end of the interview tried to give them back, and the reporter wouldn't take it. And she said that in the midst of that, even her husband, who's in the midst of seeing this crashing down around her, his brother and their family, he knew that somehow those gloves meant that God was still good. And, you know, in the midst of what we do, I think in the midst of our challenges, if we can look at things and say, but God, here's your goodness. Here's how I know that you are still good. The Bible says every good thing comes from God. And the description of God is, well, much like this word that's used for Boaz, the kindness of God, that he is kind. And the actual literal translation, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but I guess is this word named hesed. Kevin raised that a few weeks ago too, but hesed is more than just kindness. We have a hard time in English even translating it because it's so much bigger than that. Sometimes it's translated as kindness or loyalty or loving kindness, faithfulness. But it's actually something much bigger. It's this down-to-the-bone kind of commitment towards the goodness of us, of a goodness towards us. It's a God's selfless, loyal love that goes and does something for another that no one has the right to expect. They go beyond to a willingly pouring out of themselves for the good of the other person. And the reason why I think we have communion and God says, celebrate this regularly, is that it reminds us that no matter what our circumstances is, that God's goodness is still there for us, that he is still there for us. That's the backdrop at which Naomi was able to move forward. She saw that God's goodness was there, that he was working on her behalf, and she was willing to move forward. And that's where we find ourselves in the first first verse of chapter 3, where it says, Naomi comes out and she says, my daughter, it's time that I find a permanent home for you so that you'll be provided for. There's a sense of saying, you know what, this is where my life has been. This is where we are at. But we're not going to stay stuck there. We're going to make a new plan. And I put there as a second point, pray and make a new plan. And you might say, well, I don't see the prayer in there. And it's right. There's no kind of, okay, we said a prayer, we said a little prayer, and then we made a plan on Naomi's part. But what we do find in the book of Ruth is just this overarching sense of continually a relationship with God that keeps going. And really, that's what prayer is. It's not a formulaic kind of a magical thing. Okay, we said a prayer, now we made a plan, now we know that it's good. But it's more that kind of sense of God's with us. He's working among us, and we're completely dependent on him and what he's doing. And we're going to move ahead with a plan. You know, you may have found yourself, or maybe you are in a place right now where it just seems like, oh, you know, I just wish things could be like they were before. But I know for Naomi and Ruth, they couldn't bring their husbands back to life again. They couldn't erase all the pain. And the reality is, even as we move forward, there are losses that we move forward with. But I think what's so significant here is that Naomi and Ruth were able to say, but here's a new plan. This is the new future that I see before us. And they started moving towards that. And the plan was for Ruth to get rid of her mourning widow clothes, put on new clothes, and head down there. It was a risky undertaking, and have a private meeting with Boaz. Now, the only place they were going to be able to have a private meeting would have been in a situation like this. So it's an interesting deal, but they were willing to go forward. Things could have turned sideways in various ways. We know the outcome of the story, but they didn't. But they were willing to risk and step out and make a new plan. And I think what God wants us to do is in the middle of sometimes our difficulties or our challenges, and we grieve and we ask God why, and we're honest and we're authentic with God, but he also invites us to move forward in his plan. See, because God's always moving forward. God has great plans for the future in our lives and in this world. You know, theologians, they kind of describe this as God's providence, that he is working, he's caring and sustaining, and he's working towards the ultimate conclusion for the good of humanity, for his kingdom. And he's got this grand plan that he's working. And he invites us to get involved in it. You know, some people, they kind of look at providence and God and predestination, foreknowledge, and all these kind of aspects of God, and they say, well, you know what, he'll do whatever he's going to do. Some people will even make it sound spiritual, like, why pray? I mean, God's good. And they completely miss the point that the whole Bible is filled with God working with people, alongside of people, that he's inviting us to be participants and partners and to engage in what he's doing. And I think what Naomi and Ruth were able to do is kind of say, okay, God, you do have a plan here, and I'm going to get in that with you. I'm going to become an active member in the plan that you have for this world. And as we see from the end of the story, it was an incredible plan. There was this plan for God to bless Ruth ultimately with a son named Obed, who became the father of Jesse, who became the father of King David, who became the forefather of Jesus, who we celebrate today. And they are able to be part of this story that we talk about and look at. And had they not made a plan, we wouldn't be reading about them. And so God invites us to do that, to get involved and to kind of grab a piece of this world and this life and say, I'm going to move forward with it. I had a great opportunity this week to sit down with a man named Jaz Singh, who has grabbed hold of that. And it was kind of a fun thing that I found out that there's this neat undertaking that's happening right here on our doorstep, very close here on just south on 168th. Jaz Singh came and met with me along with another gal, Kelly, who's helping to organize this new plan that they've got going on. Jaz grew up on a farm just 168th and 32nd kind of thing. He was telling me the story. He didn't grow up in any kind of relationship with God or having any knowledge about God or anything, but I grew up in a farming family, and and had a produce store, he said, down in Tawasin area. And ended up kind of noticing, he found that having the three SUVs and all the stuff, you know, just was not doing it for him. And so he started kind of looking at people who were coming into the produce store and saying, you know, that person seems to have something about their life. They seem to be going somewhere. They have a light in their eye, he kind of described it as, and said, I wonder if they're... He started engaging in conversation with these people because he was curious, and he found that there was a fairly common theme in their lives, that there was that they went to church, that they were people of faith. And he said it became a bit of a game with his employees because he'd say, I bet you that person over there. And then you go over there and you find out, yeah, they do go to church. And so he happened to show up at the church that many of them went to and kind of pulled up in the parking lot and for a couple of weeks just sat out there in the parking lot and said, you know, wondered whether he would be welcome in there. And as he said it too, wondering if they would welcome brown people too. And he said, well, he finally somebody came up to him and said, hey, you want to come into church? And so he did. And he walked in, the pastor said, one of the first things the pastor said is, everyone is welcome here. And from there started a faith journey for him that continued on where he said, you know what, I realized, like, God has a plan for my life and he wants to use me. And he started kind of getting into this relationship, praying and planning. And he said, you know, you get this impression, I need to drive down this road and this road. He says, sounds kind of mystical. And I don't say God, you know, speaks to me audibly. But found himself at a place just south here off of 40th Avenue. And saw a sign saying, for lease. Ended up talking to the guy, said, I don't have any money to lease it, but what I'd like to do is take this farm and till it and raise money for the food bank and give it away. And the owner said, I think that's a great idea, and has given him a 10-year lease. So now in the last 2 years, they've grown 100,000 pounds for different food banks and to give away. And he's called it God's Little Acre Farm. And you might hear more about it from us in the future, but inviting people to partner and to volunteer and to work in that. I thought it was just an incredible story of somebody who says, you know what, God's got something for me in the future. I want to take hold of that and move forward and have a God-given vision and plan. And you see that here in the story of Naomi, in the midst of their tragedy and darkness, and even in the middle of that and because of it, in a strange way, God can use it to move us forward. Another principle that we see going on in this story that I think is so significant is the willingness to give and receive help from others. As we look down on the story a little bit further in verse 5, we see Ruth responding to Naomi with her plan and saying, I will do everything you say. You know, what had happened here is an incredible sense of loyalty and relationship between Ruth and Naomi, where she just trusted Naomi. And she was willing to listen to her. She could have said, you know what, Naomi... Things haven't gone too well for you so far. I'm not sure if I'm going to get in on this with you. But instead, she said, you know what? I really believe that God can speak to my life through you. And interestingly enough, as the story progresses, we see that between Naomi and Ruth and Boaz, they're all speaking into each other's lives and are all willing to receive kind of counsel and receive direction from each other. I think that's really significant because sometimes when things go badly in our lives, we go, you know what? We isolate and we kind of go, you know, I'm not willing to listen to anybody. I'm not going to engage in any kind of, you know, relationship or hear from them. And even maybe sometimes hear the challenging stuff from another person that we know that is true. I think it's really important in the midst of the challenges that we may face in life to be able to say, you know what? I know that community is good, that being in relationship with others is good. I'm going to be willing to receive help, and I'll also give help. And healthy relationships come out of that, and good things come out of the kinds of alliances that we develop when our lives are marked by that. I think it's so significant that for Boaz, being a man of stature, they say, you know, his name even meant in him is strength. He was wealthy. Ruth was very poor. He was an insider. She was an outsider. When she came into the threshing floor that night and said, spread out your cloak over me. Be my kinsman redeemer. He was willing to receive that. He wasn't too proud. And sometimes I think we need to look at our lives and say, am I too proud to receive help from others? Am I willing to receive it? Am I also willing to step out and give it? And we find an incredible plan comes about. We also see another principle at work here, which is interesting because there's this interesting scenario here of a woman going down in the midst of the night and coming to a sleeping man. And what all is involved in that? I really come out of this story and believe that ultimately what went on in that evening was nothing but an upstanding kind of conversation between Ruth, who was known for her character, and Boaz, who also was known for his character, coming together and saying, you know what, we're going to go forward, even at the risk. There was so much self-sacrifice involved in this. And what I like about chapter 3, verse 11, it says, everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman, is how Boaz responds to Ruth. She was known for a person who made good choices. You got to understand that Ruth was potentially a very desperate situation. She could have made choices that would have been way south of what is good. And she's known to be there for loyalty, known for doing the right thing, known as a person of character. And in the midst of that night too, she's there actually advocating on Naomi's part. See, Naomi's plan was, you go down there, Ruth, and Boaz will tell you, he'll make the next move after you go to him and uncover his feet. Ruth actually responds and says, I want you to be my kinsman redeemer. And when you unpackage the story a little bit more, you realize that what she was doing was working on behalf of Naomi's estate and saying, I want you to go and actually buy Naomi's dead husband's land. And she was asking for a sacrifice on Boaz's part. She wasn't asking him to do something that was convenient and expedient at the time. She was actually asking him to step up and do something very sacrificial, which he did. We see people making good choices. And sometimes I think in the midst of challenges in our lives, it's easy to start making compromises. Maybe things get tight financially and we say, well, maybe if I just fudge a little bit this way. Or maybe in relationships, to start making decisions that are less than upright and pure. And we see Naomi and Boaz and Ruth and Boaz not willing to go there, saying, you know what, I'm going to make the good choice. Make the good choice, even in the midst of challenges. Character is built one choice at a time. And out of that comes a legacy that people go, okay, some good things can come out of this. And it's important to know that even in the midst of the wrong decisions that we make, that God's goodness and his blessing can flow our way again. When we make the right choice and we come to God and we say, God, would you forgive me? I want to get back on the path. Communion is that symbol of that as well, of coming back to God and saying, God, you know what? I accept your forgiveness. I want to go forward and make good choices from here on in. And then finally, what we see in this passage in the last verse is Naomi saying to Ruth, you know what? Be patient, my daughter. We'll wait to hear what happens. We find Naomi and Ruth putting themselves completely into God's hands and saying, God, you know what? We'll just leave the outcome with you. You know, as we read these stories, we always have the luxury of seeing how it turned out. There was still a lot of drama, and Peter's going to cover that next week in terms of how Boaz was going to go about moving things forward and seeing things come together. And there was a lot of suspense still in that situation. Things weren't all wrapped up. But here we have Naomi saying to Ruth, you know what? We can trust ourselves to God. He's a good God. He has the best for us. God is going to work for our good and for the good of his plans and purposes. And I think that's so important for us. Whatever situation we might be in our lives is to say, you know what, God, I trust you. I know that you're good. And we want to invite you this morning to come and to participate in communion, and it's a way of saying, God, I trust you. I'm going to trust myself to what you've done for me. And I want to invite the worship band to come up right now, if you would. The symbols of communion are really about saying, God, this is good. What you did on the cross was good for me. At the time, it looked bad. And it looked so bad, the disciples left him. He was left with no one standing for him. But you were working out your purposes, and we're so thankful you did. You gave your life for me. And that tells us we can trust God. as I said before, that kind of hesed kind of goodness of God. So we invite you to take part in that this morning, to say, God, I trust you, and to take part in communion. So the way that we'll do that this morning is we will invite you to come forward, and Kevin and Peter are going to help me out with this too, if you guys want to come and hold the elements here. And you'll notice that you just have to take one cup. Actually, there's two cups together, and the wafer is below the juice. So it's right in your second cup right there. You'll see it when you pick it up. And you can hold on to it. We'll sing the song together. If you would like to stand with me, if you would. And if you want to take part in communion this morning, we invite you to come up and to take this. Bring it back to your seat. Hold on to it. And we will take it together. This is a reminder to us of what Jesus gave away for us, because his chesed, his loving kindness, is there for us. It never leaves us. And so we take the bread together and remember his broken body, which is given for us. And we take the cup, which is represents the life of God given to us, that his life can now flow through us and in our lives. Let's take that together. God, we just want to thank you that you are so good to us, that you are always good, that you are always kind, that you are faithful to us. Lord, I just thank you that we can focus in on the cross and know that no matter what our circumstances are, you are good, that you've been good to us and you will be good to us. And I thank you for that. And Lord, I just thank you that you have a plan for our lives, that you're working that out in our lives. And may we just get in on your plan. And may you give us new visions and new plans as we pray, as we're in connection with you, God. And I thank you for that. And may we move from here this morning to recommitting ourselves to making good choices that honor you, God. And I thank you that you will pursue us, you will be with us, that you are there to help us, God. In your name, amen. We're going to close with a song right now. And as Peter said, we're welcome to give to the Community Care Fund. That's where we help the people in the community. And if you do want to put in a receipt, you're welcome to. And you'll be, or put in an envelope, you'll be received for that too. Have a very, very good week. May you enjoy your family, enjoy your work, and live in God's goodness this week.
Be still. There is a healer. His love is deeper than the sea. His mercy is unfailing. His arms were fortress for the weak. Their feet the rise. Their feet the rise. I lift my head to the again. You are my refuge, you are my strength. As I pour out my heart, these things I remember. You are faithful, God, forever. There is a river that flows from Calvary Street, a fountain for the thirsty. Your grace washes over me. Let feet arise. Let feet arise. I lift my hands to live again. You are my refuge, you are my strength. As I pour out my heart, these
Father, may this song just resonate in us as we go this week. May we be focused on you and be alive for you. Amen. God bless you all. Take care.